Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. Stay up to date by following Devin on Rumble.com to watch the podcast or downloading wherever you listen to podcasts. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here's your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. It's my honor and privilege to interview Alex Marr, who just wrote this fabulous, fabulous book. I highly recommend it. It's something that, as you know, if you're listening to the podcast, I talk about all the time. But what Alex did in this, he's an editor at Breitbart, has been with Breitbart since the beginning, was a friend of Andrew Breitbart's, and he gets into some of that history in the book. But what's really great about this book is he goes through and completely destroys, and I think in a funny way, the fake news over the last several years. And Alex, congratulations on this book. I know you guys at Breitbart, you always get attacked as being, you know, right wing and all this sort of stuff. But I think one thing that you did well in this book is you actually defend Breitbart, and you talk about how you guys are really doing news, and you actually expose something that I've been talking about for a long time, is how conservative, supposedly conservative media outlets are actually being censored on social media. So you've experienced that. Breitbart continues to experience that, but you put together something that's got, I mean, gosh, I don't know how many pages are in there, but you have over 1,000 footnotes, I think, in this thing. So welcome. Thanks for doing this. So let me just start out with this. What day did you wake up and decide, hey, I'm going to write this book? When did you start this?
Thanks, Congressman, for all that wonderful intro. And you clearly get what I'm trying to do. And you're correct to note the end notes, 105 pages, over 1,200. And I wanted it to be unassailable. I wanted it to be when the Soros-funded freaks inevitably come around and try to debunk stuff in it. I want them to have to go through and look at the 1,200 end notes and to try to figure out where I made something up. It's all 100% rock solid in there, and the product of a lot of legwork on my end and a small team of researchers. And it is really an honor to see people like you and people like so many people in the Senate, from Senators Blackburn and Ernst and Cotton and others who have really reacted strongly to this. And hopefully the next step is turning this into some investigations. When it dawned on me I wanted to do it, it was really my New Year's resolution for 2020, because I wanted to take on a book. I've always wanted to. I've been in new media for 15 years, and something I've always wanted to do. But I was really starting to ruminate on this topic that the establishment media wasn't simply liberally biased. It wasn't just, you know, a little bit left of center. It was really becoming weaponized against people who had the America First worldview, who are more nationalistic, more conservative. And it wasn't just about that we're just going to slightly report from a liberal perspective. They're going to try to search and destroy, take out people. You've experienced this more than just about anyone in the country, where people have really tried to take you out for your viewpoints, which are really normative conservative viewpoints. It's really not anything that is not shared by tens of millions, if not more, Americans. And it seemed to really get so much worse when President Trump came down that escalator in 2015 and shook up the political establishment in such a major way. But the freakout was so unbelievable that it was clearly not just about that he was a threat to the status quo. It was beyond that. He was going to hit people in their pocketbooks. He was going to hit people like the Silicon Valley oligarchs. And we really are moving towards an oligopoly, an oligarchy as a society, less of a republic or a democracy and more towards an oligarchy. And he provided the biggest existential threat to people like that. And when I started to realize how deep the financial ties were between the various establishment news outlets in places like Communist China and the Democrat Party, and all these places, you start making the connections and drawing the dots together on your corkboard. And it is just stunning what I was able to unearth. And I hope people check it out.
So you, New Year's resolution in 2020, you say, okay, I'm going to write a book this year. So yeah. When did you actually go through the process? Because it's kind of up to date. I mean, in terms of, it's up to the election. So did you spend most of 2020 kind of researching and then you pull it all together? Like, how does one go about? I wrote a couple books. I mean, one's right back here, but mine's more of a pamphlet style, not a big book like what you wrote. So walk someone through that process from kind of beginning to end of putting the book together.
I'm so glad you asked, because this is something I love to share, because it was not something that I you don't think you can do it until you've done it. It's a really arduous process, but you can do it if you just put one foot in front of the other. And it was something where I thought I had an idea that needed to be shared, and that was to reset the way Americans think about media and to think of it not just about, well, it's liberally biased, that it's actually weaponized on behalf of corporations, globalists around the world, and even communist China. And their influence over American media is so stunning and deep. And it is at a level that even people who are in the know haven't really thought about. And when I kind of had that idea, and I knew it was good, and I got interest in putting a book together on it, the next thing was to assemble a small team of researchers. And luckily, I was able to get on loan some people from Peter Schweitzer's shop. Peter is an amazing guy. He investigates generally political figures. I think he's the top investigative reporter in the country.
So Schweitzer has wrote a book. He's a friend of yours.
Yes.
So you use some of his researchers.
Yeah. So he generally is introducing government. I'm sorry. He's generally investigating government figures. And I said, well, I got an idea. I will investigate some of the media figures. I think these are the most powerful people. And they operate even less transparently than the government and the bureaucratic figures that he investigates, because they're not obliged at all to disclose very much at all. And so he was in between projects, and he had a couple people that he could loan me that I used. And it was just amazing, because these are some of the best researchers in the game, and they really helped me start putting things together. So essentially, I turned them loose on a couple of topics that I thought really merited some deep dives, going into the data, going into the contracts, going into some of these huge troves of documents that people like Tom Fitton at Judicial Watch has unearthed. But it's just, even the best of the best can't go through all of them. And we started to comb through it. In the meantime, I was writing things as things started to crystallize, starting with memorializing some of, I think, the biggest fake news stories during the Trump era, which I have towards the beginning, the Fake News Hall of Shame. As you correctly note, I debunk falsehood after falsehood told about Breitbart over the years, which I think people, even if you think you know Breitbart, you'll find a lot of that fascinating. The extent to which places like Wikipedia preserve blatant falsehoods into our Wikipedia write-up, and they will not let us remove them. Right. And it's just, it's mind-blowing that they do that, because in Wikipedia, in the age of fake news, Wikipedia decides what's a fact, not based on what's a fact. They decide on what's a fact based off of the consensus of their editors, which is a frightening thing that I learned during the research process, is that their definition of a fact is when their editors, which are all one group of people from one political worldview, when they determine that they've when they all agree on something, that becomes a fact, even if it's totally false. It's a very frightening thing, and I think you witness that at basically every Silicon Valley platform. And you see this most recently with Facebook and Twitter censoring accurate Hunter Biden stories, and censoring what are potentially accurate questions about the coronavirus and where its origins were, dismissing the lab leak theory, which who knows if it's true or not, but it was certainly reasonable, and it's always been reasonable. And these big platforms saying you can't even discuss it is just stunning. And then now we know a year later that, oh yeah, all of a sudden, well, maybe we should allow for those discussions. All this stuff is unbelievably frightening. So I just started chipping away, trying to write 500-600 words a day. In the meantime, doing research and marshaling my small team of researchers. And before you know it, you've got a draft. Now, the first draft is arguably the easiest part. You probably know this, Congressman. The hardest part is when you start going through it and you realize what's really good and what's not so good. And then I wrote then the second draft was just done in a fever, just 24/7 effort for a few weeks to try to trim down the sections that were either redundant or unnecessary, and to beef up the freshest material. And that includes extensive sections on the 2020 election, a breakdown of big tech's role, which I believe amounts to interference in the election, as well as these last minute changes to voter rules ostensibly for the coronavirus, which ended up being totally unnecessary, and many of them probably illegal. All of that was written in a flurry, but still deeply researched and I think compelling.
The listeners to the podcast know that I've been harping on this for a long time. I've encouraged them to stay away from Google, stay away from YouTube, where we have Rumble is such a great alternative. And so a lot of my followers here that listen to the podcast, they're on Rumble already. It's hard to get completely away from YouTube, because YouTube has such a vast library of videos that people find informative. You know, for example, you know, if you want to learn how to cook something or put something together, sure, you can find thousands and thousands or millions of videos on YouTube. Also, people need to understand, and you just raised this, and I think it's important to put an exclamation point on it, Wikipedia. We actually found out through some very good work and research from Congresswoman Debbie Lesko, who asked this question, that, of course, the fake news hasn't covered it, but she really pinpointed down on Google and got them to admit that Wikipedia is used in their algorithm in terms of what comes up in Google. So I tell people never use Google no matter what, because they're using Wikipedia. So they can kind of say, they have a kind of phony standoff position where they can say, oh, we're really not censoring. Oh, we're just using Wikipedia that happens to be loaded with just left-wingers, where they don't accept, for example, anything that Breitbart, if you try to go on, sure, and put a Breitbart story, yeah, into the, say, the Devin Nunes profile on Wikipedia, it's immediately kicked out. I mean, it's preposterous that more Americans don't understand this. And it's not just happening to Breitbart. It's happening to essentially that 5%. I used to say 90. Now I say 95% of the content that's being developed out there by supposed news, 95% is left wing, run by left wingers, for left wingers, all left wingers. So that only leaves 5% for anybody that's actually doing any real investigative reporting. And I don't even say it's basically center left all the way to right wing. There's only 5% of people that are actually out there trying to do something, do real work. So I just want to make that point on Wikipedia and just.
Yeah. Can I expand on that a bit? Because that comes up, and I give people, even if people are familiar with this, I try to lay that section out in the book to, as crystal clear as possible. So you can use these arguments when you're talking to people. But remember, Wikipedia is not recognized in the vast majority of universities. They don't treat it as true. Yet, if you go on someone's Facebook page, or if you go on, do a Google search for people, that you're going to be getting these things, I think they're called postcards or postage stamps or something, where it's this little information box that'll pop up at the top or the top right side of your screen on Facebook or Google. And that's all populated from Wikipedia, which is loaded with falsehoods. And this is how people are framed to the public in a massive way. And there's almost no recourse for it's incredible effort if you can even get that content edited at all, even if there are falsehoods in it. And you're correct to note that Breitbart's been banned from Wikipedia. All of those people that push the fake Russian collusion hoaxes and the PP dossier and all the people who targeted you for no good reason, Congressman, all those outlets are still sacrosanct with Wikipedia. That's an outrage.
We also are trying to follow the money, because our assumption is that these tech companies, through a series of nonprofits plus Democratic operatives, are all funneling money into these people that spend all day updating Wikipedia sites. And that's why when you see, you know, typical Republican Wikipedia entries turn us essentially into, you pick the derogatory term, and they do it in a very tricky way, because it's essentially what I would say is defamation by implication. So they loop together a bunch of things that may be true as read individually, but when you read it all together, you get done reading about Republican congressman whoever, and you get through it, oh yeah, this must be a really dirty person. And they really manipulate the person that thinks that Wikipedia is some unbiased platform. I'm trying to get more and more Republicans to do what I do, which is to don't treat those 95% as actual media or reporters. You need to treat them as operatives for the left, amen, and for the Democratic Party, and they shouldn't be talking to them. So if you take somebody like me, I don't talk to them. I don't acknowledge them as being real news reporters. And I only talk to people that I know are doing real work, like yourself. And I know I'm going to be on your radio show next week. But it's so critical, I think, for people to understand that the money flow of these tech companies, just like Facebook put $350 million into the election. You want to talk about election fraud?
Sure.
That's the fraud. How do you get an oligarch? I mean, nobody writes a $350 million check for nothing. $350 million, right, Alex, is real money.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all because, even though Donald Trump didn't really do much to crack down on big tech, he at least posed somewhat of a threat to them, at least in a theoretical sense, which could keep them honest to a degree. He was pretty focused on Twitter, and he said a lot of negative stuff on Twitter. But Joe Biden is not a threat to big tech. I mean, Joe Biden loves big tech. And he, because they've helped him. So now big tech knows that they can just keep running up the score. And that's why Mark Zuckerberg dropped all these drop boxes at the last minute in all these areas that appear to favor Democrats. It's an influence play. He was protecting himself And these are things that we need to make clear to people. And, you know, one point of clarity, Congressman, is that we announce our biases, right? Where I stand on every single position. And then I like to lead with the facts before I give my opinion, thus the 1,200 endnotes in the book. But then you can judge me knowing that I'm giving you a bias and giving you my perspective. And that's fine. The New York Times doesn't do that. Wikipedia doesn't do that. And that's why there's a fun section in the book where I list all of these rules. I call it my secret decoder ring to translate the establishment media and the way they're framing stories so that you can see what they're trying to do to manipulate every single story that's all political to fit their agenda. And I'm with you that if you're on the right, you can't be talking to these outlets unless you know it's strategically advantageous to you. And sadly, too many Republicans are still trying to win over the establishment press. It's not going to happen. They're never going to let you. They're trying to destroy you. It's crystal clear to me.
I know. I just talked to him. I'm blue in the face. I get so mad at my colleagues. I'm like, what are you doing? It's like they're always trying to appease this supposed middle of the road. Well, we have to go reach those people. It's like, no, especially in today's world where 30 years ago, you had four TV networks and a couple newspapers and maybe a talk radio station. 20 years ago, you had some cable stations. 10 years ago, it was kind of the beginning of social media. And then 5 years ago, you had social media, all sorts of networks. And now today, it's moved so far. Just since Trump walked down those escalators, you know, now look at me. I'm actually talking to you, somebody who I think does a great job. You wrote a hell of a book, and I'm putting it out to my own followers. So not only do we not need them, anytime you actually do interviews with that 95%, you're taking away viewers from watching, whether it's my podcast or your radio show that you have in the morning, or a lot of the great videos that Breitbart does, or a whole host of other people. Sure. So it's just completely asinine that any Republicans talk to these news media outlets. It's kind of funny. I'll kind of corner them and they kind of smirk or kind of chuckle about it. It's not a joke. I mean, you're really aiding the enemy. I mean, there could be occasionally a strategic point that you want to make. I mean, look, there's maybe some trade publications that, yeah, they're owned by left wingers, but, you know, people in the trade actually do read that stuff. So you may want to talk to them, but under no circumstance should you ever be talking to the Russia P-tape hoaxers. I mean, no Republican, right, anybody who was caught up in that should never talk to one of those damn reporters ever. I mean, it's just, anyway, you could get me on my soapbox here, Alex, but.
No, I love it. And that's part of what the book, I think, unwinds a lot of that. And by the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't plug all the amazing legacy that Andrew Breitbart left, because I do think that a lot of the citizen journalism, which is taking place, which is, you're a part of it, and we're certainly a part of it at Breitbart News, it came from him and him saying that if you've got a cell phone, then you're a journalist and you might be more credible than the so-called trained journalists. And I can't help but think of the PP dossier, which was first published by a guy named Ben Smith at BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed is a mega investment from NBC News. Ben Smith then ends up losing his job, I guess, at BuzzFeed, where he was editor-in-chief, because I guess they rolled back their newsroom in a major way. And then he essentially failed upwards and got promoted to the New York Times media columnist. So he's got a mega platform. He spends some of that time defending NBC, which has major investment in BuzzFeed. He still has shares in BuzzFeed, even though he promised he would sell them, but he hasn't yet. All of this is just a web of just total conflicts of interest, one after the next. And over and over again, example after example, the stories are wrong in the same direction. And that's the direction where conservative Americans, traditional Americans, pro-Trump Americans, people like yourself, people like myself, we all look terrible every single time there's a mistake. And there's never a mistake that makes one of us look good. A congressman, did they ever accidentally report that you're spending twice as much time at a soup kitchen as you've been spending? Last I checked, this stuff never happens. If there's a falsehood, it's always designed to make you look horrible or me look horrible, Trump look horrible. And it should be a joke to people, but it's not. It's not a joke yet. It should be.
Well, look, we're continuing to work on this, and, you know, House Republicans, I continue to talk to them. I try to get them over to Rumble. It's unfortunate what happened to Parler, but Parler is back up and going. It's going slowly, but it's getting better. So give it some time. And I know, Alex, I just appreciate you taking the time, you being willing to come on my show and bring your book to my audience. And I'll tell you what, I highly recommend this to all of my colleagues. In fact, if I'm going to talk to a lot of them about your book, because you really put everything that all of us have experienced over the last 5 years, you put it into one definitive piece that really highlights the criminality. And I say that it really is criminal and against the law what these media outlets have been doing. I mean, it's every day massive levels of defamation, and you really call them out, and congratulations.
Thanks, Congressman. And when you're on my show, Breitbart News Daily, coming up, I want to ask you about some of these, what I think are clear soft money contributions that these news outlets are making. It's very clear the people funding these outlets are funding the Democrat candidates. And it's just an amazing thing that they've figured out a way to have unlimited earned media for their chosen candidates. And that's what we're talking about with oligopoly. I mean, these news outlets are owned by these major conglomerates. Their boards are filled with these big corporate globalists. And it's just the sort of thing that I don't think it's sustainable in this country. And if it wasn't for the free speech we have and programs like yours and mine, then we'd be totally hopeless here.
We're in a real dangerous place in this country, because with only 5%, and those are just rough numbers that I use, of people that are doing real investigative reporting, there's so many examples just in the last few months of things that have went unreported, whether it's the Wuhan lab, where, you know, anybody that talked about it was deemed a conspiracy theorist,
right,
to even the work that's being done by at American Greatness by Julie Kelly. I mean, she should win a Pulitzer Prize for actually following around all of these poor people that have been locked up in jail with no due process. And I say that, I always got to qualify it, Alex, you know how this is.
Sure. I have
to qualify and say anybody that broke a window deserves to be in jail. Okay. But you still have your right to due process. And Julie Kelly's been doing phenomenal work out there. And under any normal circumstance, I guarantee you, if there were Antifa people rotting in a Portland prison, there would be 70,000 reporters down on the jail demanding, why is Joe fascist, anti-fascist, property destroyer? Why hasn't he had his court date in 3 months? And that stuff is really going on. I'm not making this up. It's actually happening. And nobody except for outside of a few people are actually reporting on it.
It's great points. And we see the inverse coming true, where you see the establishment left and corporations bailing out rival and agitators from a different political bent than the one you're talking about. And of course, I disavow all political violence. I hated what happened on January 6th, but it doesn't mean that we're supposed to throw out every single thing about the way we structured the entire country around this date. That's what the media wants us to do, and they're going to continue to try to distract us with this.
Yeah, justice is supposed to be blind, but we've learned over the last 5 years, it isn't. Americans are being treated differently in different jurisdictions and under different scenarios. I mean, really, you have to get to the point now, you have to call some of these people political prisoners. I would have never thought I'd say that we would have Republican political prisoners. Even a year or two ago, I would have never thought that would come out of my mouth, but it is. So, Alex, thank you so much. A great book. Congratulations. And I look forward to being on your radio show here in the coming weeks.
Congressman, that means so much. And let's do it again.
Awesome. This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next time.
Stay up to date by following Devin Nunes on Rumble.com to watch the podcast or download wherever you listen to podcasts.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days.
Not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith. We the people free.
afraid.
That's why they call her the home of the brave.
With a prayer and a purpose, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.